So it's 7 minutes after midday. You're listening to Vectis Radio. We are expecting the leader of the council in a little bit later on. Hopefully he's remembered. He wouldn't be the last councillor to forget that he's coming in, but let's see. Hopefully, fingers crossed. He says he's timed it that he can walk across from County Hall at 12:30 when his meeting finishes, and he'll be here in 2.5 minutes. It's not that much of a walk. He could jog it if he wanted to, but hopefully talking to him a little bit later on. But my guest in the meantime is a young lady that joined us the other day on a, what do they call it, a traineeship?
Yeah.
Don't they? Now, just get yourself a little bit closer to that microphone. That's better. Just you know. This is Jasmine. Jasmine Wilson, you don't mind us giving it your last name. Now, you were late coming in this morning. And one of the reasons why you were late, is you struggle sleeping.
I do.
And so you go to bed much, much later than most people.
Yeah.
And then you kind of give yourself a bit of a problem getting up. So it begs the question, because you're not the only one, because most of the teenagers today have this issue with going to bed. So, do you want to talk about why you can't go to bed and go to sleep until 4 o'clock in the morning?
Can do.
Go on then, tell us why, because I'm intrigued. Because I'll tell you what, let me tell you about me first of all, okay? Because, you know, when I was your age, I had a job, and if I'd have woken up at 4 or 5, or if I'd have gone to bed at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, I wouldn't have been able to do the job that I'm doing the next day.
Yeah, the struggle.
I would have been asleep somewhere. I would have really, really struggled on 3-4 hours sleep. So I would have really struggled. So I couldn't do it. So it's only kind of this generation now has this idea of, I'm going to stay up later, and I'm gonna just wing it the next day. And if I wake up, I'll wake up, and if I don't... I saw a chart yesterday of how much... And it was a fascinating thing. I wonder if I can pull it up on the iPod in a minute. It's a fascinating thing of how many hours you should have the age that you are. Oh. And you're 17?
Yep.
And I looked at this, and it said somewhere in the region of between 7 and 9 hours sleep a night. So if you're and roughly it's the same for me. They say between 6 and 8 hours, and when you get to the age of 70 odd, you only need about 6 hours sleep.
Blimey.
Between 4 and 6 hours. So it all changes. And when you're a baby, I think it's something like 17, maybe 18 hours of sleep a day. We'd all like that now, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I'd love that.
But then you think, I can hear my mum saying, you sleep your life away, and you'll never get to do anything. So I'm looking at you and thinking, well, you must be an average 17-year-old. You must be needing at least 8 hours sleep, and you're not getting it.
I'm lucky if I get 2, 3, 4 hours sleep.
So why go to bed so late?
I don't know, you're just not tired. No, I'll sit up and watch TV till stupid o'clock. When it gets boring, I'll turn off the light, try and go to bed, and just lay awake all night.
Okay, because you're not the only one. You must know loads of people that are having this kind of... it's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And you've chosen it, because you don't have to go to bed at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
I know, but the time just slips away. Like, you could be sat there, because the place that I live in, you could just be sat there talking to all your mates... 10 o'clock, next time you have a look, it's like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're like, oh, bedtime.
Now, it might sound like I'm being like, an old fuddy-duddy, but at the same time, I look at this and think, well, hang on a minute. Who made up the rules where you've got to go to bed at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock? It's the way our life fits in with everything else.
Yeah.
You know, so who makes up them rules? I'd like to, some days, just turn life on its head. Some people will say... Well, hang on a minute, it's easier to sleep at night because it's dark.
I don't know.
But that doesn't stop me from falling asleep in the summertime, in the garden.
True.
In the bright sunshine. So that's not quite right. So, you know, is Big Brother saying, hey, you've got to go to bed at 10 or 11 o'clock because it's normal and it means that everyone else can not worry about you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're less aggravation on the street because we know where you are.
Yeah, we're all asleep.
So, you know, what is it about this generation that's kind of turned it up on its, you know, turned it around and said, I'm not going to bed till 4 o'clock in the morning because I'm going to play Xbox. And believe it or not, we had similar things like, you know, I'm not quite sure whether I can remember what they were, Xbox-wise, but we had something similar in our year as well.
PlayStations.
Well, would it have been PlayStations probably before that as well? There used to be the thing where you could play tennis on the TV, but then you'd have to take your TV up in your bedroom. We didn't have the smaller contraptions. But so what stops you? Come on, what stops you going to bed? Really?
I don't know. I really don't know. Just not tired. Like, sleep during the day and awake all night.
Yeah.
I think when you just start to get yourself in that routine, it just sticks and it's really hard to get out of.
So how long do you reckon it'll take? Because you started here 2 days ago.
Yeah,
how long do you reckon it'll take before you're into some kind of routine where you're going to bed at sensible o'clock?
A good week or two.
A good week?
Yeah.
Oh, only a week?
Yeah.
Well, okay, well, I'll go with the week.
Yeah, we'll find out, won't we?
I'll give you two.
Okay. Right?
I'll give you two to sort yourself out. All right? Because I was expecting you to say, oh, it might take me a good couple of months.
No.
You know, because it's
weeks.
A routine you're in. How long have you been in this kind of routine?
About 8 months, 9 months.
So what happened before then? I mean, just say, for instance, when did you suddenly say to yourself, right, I'm going to bed at 4 o'clock in the morning?
Mainly when I left school.
Right.
Yeah,
so when
definitely.
You left school, was there, like, rules and regulations you had to, you know, because our mums and dads, they always just say, in bed by 9 o'clock.
Oh, my mum tried. It wouldn't work.
Wouldn't work.
No. I'd go to bed when I wanted, if I'm honest.
Now, it's really, and I just want to highlight the fact that, you know, my son is really disciplined now. He's in the army now.
Yeah.
And he had similar kind of issues with... And you used to walk upstairs about 10:30, and you'd know that you told him to go to bed at 10 o'clock, lights out, and you look at the crack under the door, and there's the light, and you can hear him in there watching the television, and you know that he'd nip off to school next, and you don't know how much sleep he's had, and you really don't. But when he came home from school, you knew that he didn't have enough because he was all grumpy and antisocial. So you're not the only one. You're really not. It's this generation that's doing it. And I'm just fascinated as to why it's, you know, and who's to say that what we're telling you is right?
Exactly. It's just...
But it's healthier, isn't it?
Yeah, to have a nice routine.
Like, yeah.
Sleep at night, sleep in day, but...
Would you seriously like that?
Now I would.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't be so tired all the time.
If you could flick a switch, would you do it?
Of course I would.
Truthfully.
Yeah, I would.
Don't, you
honestly.
Know, what's that thing? If you
I
lie,
sleep a day away.
If you lie, you die. You know, if you just so hand on heart, you can say that that's what I really, really want to do, want to be able to achieve.
Because I want a job, I want to get, like, something behind me, be able to do stuff, then yeah.
Good for you. Good for you. So only you can do it.
Exactly.
Really, only you can do it. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to find out more about you. And I'm just trying to find a quick song and I can't find the one that I like. I doubt I'll be able to find one that you like. what sort of music do you like?
Ed Sheeran. He's my favourite.
Ed Sheeran is great.
Yeah.
Ed Sheeran is great. Let's see if we can find oh, no, we played this on the show yesterday. I've got to play this all the way through because I got told off for not doing it yesterday. So these are the Osmonds.
Thank you.
There we are. That's the Osmonds and Crazy Horses. It's 17 minutes after 12. I've got Jasmine. You provide jazz, don't you? Jazz
definitely.
Wilson. Jazz Wilson's in, and she's been with us now for a couple of days. And we've just been having a chat off air. I've got a fire one at you in a minute because of a question. Because the reason why we got you in today is because I think it's fascinating. And it'd be fascinating for anybody else out there that's listening roughly my age. And if there's youngsters, they'll be thinking, you know, they'll be understanding what you're saying, and they'll probably be understanding what I'm saying. And maybe at the end of it, we can be understandable with each other. I went for a walk the other week, and I went through the bus station. You mentioned the bus station, and to one side of the bus station, there's the library.
Yeah.
Okay. And
hotspot.
And this is the fascinating thing. This is, and I can see you probably one of those people that were sat around the outside of the library.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a Sunday afternoon, and we're walking there, and the kids are sat in the windows.
Yeah,
they're sitting in the windows because what they've done, because obviously some bright spark had this wonderful idea of, why don't you put a wall that looks like a seat by the window of the library? Instead of having just a wall and no seats, so it was just a complete straight wall and nowhere for someone to sit, they put a seat there more or less, haven't they?
Yeah.
So in you know, hindsight, that's grown-up's fault because they've screwed up, haven't they? They've messed up.
We can blame them.
They've given you a seat. Not only is it sheltered as well.
Yeah, it is.
From the rain.
Definitely.
And as I was walking by, there was some youngsters sat in the window, and I looked at them and I thought, maybe they're about 14, 15. And there were some other kids that were sat nearby, but they weren't sat in the window.
Yeah.
And they were slightly younger. And I said to the wife, I said, look, they're in train. They're in training, they are. A couple of years' time, they'll be up. Ain't big enough yet to sit up there.
No.
So at what point do you think, right, okay, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go down and sit outside the library. I mean, first of all, why?
I don't know. It's just a hot spot for all the kids to go sit, like, or when it's raining, just go stand under there, or just where everyone used to meet. It's the easiest and most exciting place to be at the time.
But do you feel like now it's not, hang on, why did I waste so much time?
I hate
there?
Waiting for a bus and then now, let alone sitting in there for hours and
do you ever feel like going back and seeing the next, because what we said is they're the next generation.
Yeah.
Those 11-year-olds, they'll be up on that seat next week
because
they'll be big enough to.
It's bad.
And they'll be giving it large, and they're probably having more fags than they are now because they would have stepped up, raised the game a little bit. Do you ever feel like going back there and saying, oi, I used to sit there, and you know, it's not that great. It suddenly dawned on me that I wasted so many years.
I did. I spent more time in there than I did at school.
So there you go. It's just a fascinating thing.
I know.
What's the mindset there? Why are you doing that? But having said that, it's because the grown-ups who designed it and built it put a seat there.
Wanted us to sit there.
Yeah, how stupid are they? Absolutely. So, I mean, you don't do that kind of thing now?
No, I'd rather sit at home.
God, so why? You'd rather sit at home? You've got somewhere to sit?
Yeah, it's cold, wet, and everyone over there are not very nice people.
Okay, look, I've got a question, because it's, you know, I've got loads of questions, because it's fascinating, and I think sometimes it's all about listening and talking and communicating, and then we find out that we understand each other in some kind of way. There's something that's always kind of bothered me about youngsters when they get to 15, 16, 17.
Right.
They're like the wilderness years. Okay, so you're 17, you can't drink in a pub,
no.
All right? But I bet you'd like to.
Oh, I'd love to.
So this is like the wilderness years for you. And they are. You're too old to go to youth club.
Yeah.
Yeah?
But too young to go out drinking.
Exactly.
So what do we
do? So what do you do? What do you want to do? What would you like to see happen? Because I believe that in here somewhere is a wonderful idea that no one's had yet. And basically it's a case of those kids that are 15, 16, 17, too young to drink, too old for youth club, where
do they
go? And
that's why we hung around a bus station.
Exactly. So what are you saying? We should just build a bus station and call it a youth club and stick you there?
Yeah, no.
Or just build some stupid window seats underneath the library, you know, so you can sit there and maybe have a little tuck shop at the end of the way there so you can get someone to eat and drink.
Yeah.
Do you ever think, what do I need? What do we need? What do 15, 16, 17-year-olds need? Somewhere to go?
Yeah, somewhere to, like, not full of, like, little kids and obviously no adult. It should be like a 16 to 18 group, youth club, not a youth club, but like a social gathering.
See, that you just stumbled on youth club. No, and then you think, oh no, you can't have that, because there's a stigma attached to youth club.
We're not youths anymore. That's for 11, well, we are, technically.
11 to 14, 15-year-olds. Yeah. And now you're slightly older, you want to be treated a bit more maturely, but you can't. You can't go into a place of drink. Is it always about alcohol?
No.
Is it?
Most teenagers, our age, are guys.
Do you think it would be right for people to say, to encourage you to go to these places between 15 and 17, hey, look, you can't drink, but you can have a cigarette. Do you think that's right? We should be encouraging you?
No, not you should. But if you're going to smoke, you're going to smoke, but just not to be encouraged to, obviously.
How long have you smoked?
Me?
Yeah.
About five years. I was about 12, 13.
Right, okay. So, you know, it's... It's not as young. My brother started smoking a lot younger than that. And,
really?
And now he's 53, 54. And now he's developed issues. So he's now got problems with his lungs. So he's been smoking for all those years. Have you got a plan in your head to sort of think, right, I'm gonna give it up, get my life on track, and I'm gonna, you know, just make an effort here.
One day I will.
One day.
Yeah. Okay. One day it will just snap and I wanna.
You hope, yeah.
I hope so anyway.
Well, I mean, good for you for saying it, because half of it is realising that, hey, look, they can't go on like this forever. Really can't. But the other, when did you stop hanging around in the bus station? When did you stop hanging around the library?
When I got with my new boyfriend.
Okay, so just say, for instance, if he was to split up, would you then go back to the, you wouldn't go back to that?
No, I've grown up a hell of a lot since then.
Will you do me a favour? Because I think you'd help.
What's that?
If you were to go, they'd probably tell you to clear off anyway. But if you go,
I'm too old for that. Now.
Next time you see a crowd of youngsters outside the library, just tell them, hey, look, I used to sit there like that.
They're probably effing blind at me.
They probably would, yeah. But just say, look, I've got piles now, so that's what you're going to get.
It is cold as well, isn't it? Yeah,
it's very cold. I'll tell you what we do. We're playing play another song. Should we play another song? Let's play another song, and then we'll come back with a little bit more in a mo. I got all these songs here, and I'm looking at you, and none of them really. They're all like old, and but you like old music, don't you? You like the 80s?
Not really.
Okay, you don't like the 80s?
No.
Okay, what, the 70s?
No.
Current stuff, that's what you like, isn't it? Yeah, we could play some current stuff, but I don't really fancy it. So it's The Damned and Love Song. Well, they were back in the day, back in the 1970s, obviously they were part of the punk movement, which was like, I don't know, it was punk music, but very often they used to get the tag of they were anti-social and anti-grown-ups and things like that. So that's the reason why we're playing them. That's the Damned and Love Song. And I was just talking to you off air, and I said I was going to ask you a question. The question is a simple one. What annoys you about grown-ups?
Them trying to tell us what to do. No, so I think as young adults, right. My age, 17, I am a young adult. I think we should be able to do things that we want with the support of adults, not standing high over you, telling you what to do.
Okay.
You shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. Maybe you should do this. Maybe that's not the best option.
Okay.
Whatnot.
Do you feel, you know, that you could actually, without those people, those grown-ups, without their interference, could you survive? Would you survive?
It depends on what willpower you got. Depends on what you... Do you want to know what you want to do?
Do you know what you want to do?
Not yet, no.
Not yet?
No.
See, I never knew what I wanted. Well, I did, but it was always pie in the sky and it was never going to happen. We never had a radio station on the Isle of Wight when I was growing up, and that's what I really, really wanted to do.
No, I did want to be a beautician, but things didn't work out, and I've got other interests, but I'm not 100% sure what interests.
Okay. Well, look, we'll talk a lot more about things over the coming weeks.
We will.
And I'm hoping we get to find out who the real... jazz it, and hopefully it'll be a case of give it a couple of weeks, maybe even a couple of days, when you got into some kind of routine and you're getting your life together.
Yeah.
And then you will nip down to the library and you will say to those kids that are sat on the window there, hey, look, I used to do that. It's not bright, it's not big, it's
but
not
smart.
But
now look at me.
Exactly, look at me. Exactly. All right, our guest has arrived for the next section of the show, and we shall wheel him in, give him a quick haircut, and then we should be chatting to him. It's the leader of the council, Jonathan Bacon, here in Two Ticks.
The Lunchtime Social is brought to you in association with White Fibre for the best deals in broadband, television and phone, 100% local. All employees live on the Isle of Wight. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
The Hair Lounge is a unisex hairdresser's in both Newport and Ryde. With its experienced team of stylists, we pride ourselves in offering great-looking hair at affordable prices. Whether you are looking for expert colouring to precision cutting, at The Hair Lounge, we pride ourselves on being a forward-thinking salon, which uses the industry's leading brands and techniques to always make sure our clients look and feel their very best. Call them 01983 718584 or visit them 35 James Street in Newport. The Hair Lounge are also at 9 Cross Street in Ryde, or call 01983 564447. The Hair Lounge, great hair at affordable prices.
Business Insight, a weekly programme of interviews and insights from some of the island's most respected business leaders on what drives their success, plus business news and information to help your business succeed in today's fast-paced and competitive business world. Mondays at 6:20 p.m. on The Evening Event with Darren Fernando. Also available for download and podcast online at vectisradio.com. Business Insight is brought to you by Jigsaw Sales and Marketing Consultants, driving business success.
White Trash. Trash, 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 trash.
White Trash World, the home of the island's very own skate brand, White Trash. 59 High Street Ryde. It's open Mondays, Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays. 10:30 till 6 p.m. Not just about skateboards, it's clothing, gifts, shoes, books, DVDs and more. The island's only skate store, White Trash World, Ryde High Street.
Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, saving lives across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Flying 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Our helicopter is called out many times a day and we can reach anywhere within the Isle of Wight, including the helipad at St Mary's Hospital, within 20 minutes. Funded solely by donations, we rely upon the generosity of the public to keep us flying and saving lives. To see how you can help, please check out www.hiow-airambulance.org.uk.
Over 50, health beginning to suffer. Frustrated with those annoying aches and pains as you arise in the morning, but hate the thought of going to the gym. We're helpers on hand. Here at Jeremy Marr's Personal Training, we provide structured health and fitness packages that get results no matter what your starting point. Our service is both friendly and supportive, and we have helped hundreds of island residents enhance their lives. Whether you want to be able to play with your grandchildren, improve your health, have less aches and pains, or look and feel 10 years younger, we have a programme for you. Learn how to start your own health and fitness journey today. Call Jeremy Marr's Personal Training on 58 0008. That's 58 0008.
The Lunchtime Social is brought to you in association with White Fibre for the best deals in broadband, television and phone. 100% local. All employees live on the Isle of Wight. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
Now that it's 12:33, I've been looking forward to this all week. Because it's the first time that I think you've been on air at Vectis Radio since you've become leader of the council. Welcome, Jonathan Bacon.
Thank you very much. You made a few changes around here. The nice chaise longue and the potted palms. It's all looking very tropical in here.
It's very good, isn't it? So how's it been?
Well, 2 weeks into the job and things are settling in. It's still early days, but I'd like to think things are going okay so far.
Were you shocked when you... Because I kind of... I don't want to say too much, but I know there was a lot of people out there that were... Well, hang on a minute. We had a... Ian was there, and then all of a sudden he's not. And then Steve Stubbins didn't. And then all of us... Right, OK. Was it all a bit of a blur?
It was a bit of a blur on the evening, yes. But obviously, I knew a little more than some other people about things that were going through Ian's mind. And obviously, we now know that he's actually standing as MP. So, as I say, I had a little more clue than some people. But things did happen fairly quickly. But, yeah.
What I've read into that night is that you got 26 votes, so that would have meant that some of the Tories would have voted for you as well.
Yes, they did. Plus the fact we had about eight people absent that night as well, so it was quite a healthy vote, which I was very pleased about. And
yeah.
It was across the chamber, and I hope that will indicate that. I know Ian used to talk about this a lot, but it's something I really want to take forward with cross-chamber or cross-group working with all the members, as I said, when I put a little letter in the county press this week, which was actually essentially what I said in the chamber on the night in question. The way to go forward is together, because if everyone's fighting against each other, you don't achieve anything. No stability means nothing can be done. So if we are now... solidifying what I think Ian was working on in bringing people together a bit more, with actually focusing on the island and the residents as the main thing, that can only be to the good.
I think in a way it's something that the Isle of Wight has been crying out for a number of years, and I think Ian was there for just over a year, and he's kind of laid some foundations there.
Yeah.
and obviously, you know, let's hope that we can move on as a group of people for the better, because I think definitely we need it, because we've got to roll the sleeves up and get stuck into, you know, what needs to be done. And there's an awful lot of stuff that needs to be done, isn't there?
There is, yeah. There's a lot to be done. There's a question of how much we can actually do, particularly with the financial situation in. So to some extent, perhaps the better way to talk about it is that there's a lot to cope with. But again, you're only going to do that. You're only going to cope with a difficult situation if you all muck in together, as you say, sleeves up and get your hands dirty.
Yeah, I think that's about right too. Just, you know, what I want to do is use these times. I'm hoping you're going to come in on a regular basis, because people...
I will certainly attempt to, as much as my diary allows.
So you're so much busier than you used to be. So do you get your own parking space now at the Riverside?
That is the one thing you get, because a lot of people have said to me, oh, all these things you're going to get now, all these things, all these benefits you're going to get. But I have to declare I get a parking space.
Right, okay. Well, good for you. And so, quite right too. I mean, let's be honest, if you're the leader, you need to...
That's the one thing I do.
Yeah, no, good. There's lots of things that people have asked me to ask you via Facebook messages, and I'm hoping that this time on a regular basis you can come in and sort of put to bed the rumours that people are talking about, because that's the daft thing. I had a heated conversation with my wife yesterday, and I said
very rare thing for you.
No, it's not. I just feel sometimes that, and this is my biggest beef, and it always have been at the council, is that maybe it's, you've got a PA or PR team that have to be, and I know the reasons why, they have to be guarded a little bit. And I think maybe if they weren't quite so guarded and have the ability to give people information, there wouldn't be so many people wanting FOIs and wasting people's time. And if we were a little bit more communicative, i.e. you're coming in and answering questions, the amount of people, and I look this up, the amount of people that ask for FOIs and wasting people's time on the most ridiculous questions.
Do you know what's happened there, I think, is that a culture has developed because of an attitude that we had in the past. I think within the... we have a very small communications team. I mean, years ago, I can remember, I used to have a go about it. You're spending £1 million on communication. You've got a whole office full of these people. That's all gone. Mm. We do have three people there because the council has to get information out into the public about what we're doing when there are emergency situations. And it's quite a big job to, you know, get the information, chase it up, check it's accurate, put it into a form that people can understand, get it out not just in a press statement but on social media and so on. So there is a function to do there. But yeah, we do have a very high number of FOIs, Freedom of Information Act requests. But as I say, I think our history has led to that. And there is a culture of people thinking that they have to go via such official means to get information out of the council. And I'd like to think in actuality, if they come to their ward councillor or councillor, we'll respond to their query. If it's something technical, we can't do it directly, we'd go to an officer and get the information. But that's certainly the way I work.
And that's refreshing to hear. And then hopefully it might rub off on people. And you know, so they're not on the phone constantly, oh, I'm asking about this. And it's great that you've come in today, because we're going to ask a few questions about... Let's deal with the one that's been asked most of all. And again, I look at this and I think, well, we've had this one before, and I'm pretty sure you can dispel the rumour. Can you ask if we... You know, we are a holiday island, so... how on earth will closing toilets help us? Are you closing toilets?
No. What we're doing is running a consultation. I think it's been a bit slow to get underway on the technical side, but there's a consultation, that dreaded word, that word people hate, but it's, I can't think of a better one, on so-called community toilets. Both myself and the deputy leader have said very openly in public meetings in the council that what we're not going to do is diminish the number of toilets. We are hopefully, because they are things that cost a lot, going to find different ways in which those toilets can be provided through businesses and so on. If you think, say, in Newport, we've got some public toilets, but the number of businesses you've got around who could provide and almost in effect do, by being shops, provide a toilet facility for the public, means that we could then cease that provision of a public toilet in Newport, but we're not actually losing the number of traps, whatever you want to call it, that
right.
we have.
You're right.
Because that's the other word, yeah. I was trying to think of a polite one.
For those people living on East Cows, you know, the urinals.
But the cost of providing a traditional public toilet is quite high. A lot of that comes down to the way they're treated, the risk of vandalism. They're also, it's no point denying it, havens for occasionally activity you don't want to encourage. And that sort of thing can go if you have a toilet in something, a place that's more public, a place that's looked after, able to be looked after more. But, sorry, I'm going slightly off the mark. What we're doing is seeking to rationalise our toilet provision by... in terms of how it's provided, but not in terms of the quantity. And indeed, what I would hope, and Steve Stubbings as well, again, we both said this, is that through this process we might actually increase the number.
Right.
Because they are an important facility. They're a very important facility for a tourist island.
So, you know, those people that are saying, oh, you're going to close the toilets, that's hideous, It's not happening.
That is not the plan.
That's the horse's mouth there. It's not happening. That's not the plan. Is there, it, just say, for instance, if it did happen, I mean, you know, is that something that's... It could happen, but beyond your control, but it's not the plan?
Well, it is under our control in terms of whether we shut the ones that are in public ownership, but... you know, unless the government takes away another 60 million from us, you know, we know the pressures we're under for the next few years. I can't see way into the future, and I'd be daft if I said for the next 30 years there will be exactly the same number of toilets. But the immediate plan, and certainly under my watch, is the number will remain, or fingers crossed, increase.
Okay. You mentioned there under your watch. I mean, I said to you off air, I said, you've got the capabilities of being probably the one, the most popular council leader that we've had in like many, many years. It's not any disrespect to Ian, because he's done a job, and I think he had to lay the foundations and maybe rub a few people up the wrong way by doing it. But I can't remember too many council leaders in the past that I've actually looked at and thought, hang on a minute, you're quite popular, but you've got the right personality, you're making all the right noises at the moment.
You're just making me blush now, stop it.
Sorry. Anyway,
it's not about being popular, it's about doing the job properly. I think we've had council leaders in the past, we've had a range of council leaders, we've had a council leaders who have done a lot of good work, and maybe that hasn't been appreciated. I think that's actually one thing with Ian. And he, as you say, you use the phrase lay the foundations. I think a lot of the things he's done, particularly in terms of building bridges with small businesses, Chamber of Commerce, bodies on the mainland who can provide funding for economic development, it's a lot of unseen work, but it's very valuable work that will
definitely
feed in, hopefully, to perhaps the more visible things we're hoping to do over the next few years.
I think Ian had a difficult task of following the regime that was in place.
I think he was the only person who could have taken it on
and,
at that
and
point.
And I think, yes, he had to flex his muscles and show some great character and some strength. Okay, next question from Sylvia. Are the lollipop ladies being sacked?
No.
I'm not flaring up any of these questions. I'm just going to ask them as they are asking them. No.
Yeah. Again, school crossing patrols is one of those issues. It's an important service and it's a necessary service. It is something that we wish to retain, but again, it's how you provide it. The conversation going on with schools at the moment is for them to provide it. You know, the funding that schools get goes directly to schools. It used to be the case it came to the council, and then the council could work out how to spend it. A lot of control over what the schools have and how they use it has gone from us directly. But again, we're not cutting the school patrols. We're asking for initially the schools to provide them and take on that service. And again, possibly as with toilets, they're better placed to know how to do it to the best for the best for the children. If schools, for whatever reason, have difficulty doing that, we can possibly look to sponsorship, volunteer services and so on. But underpinning all that is that if anyone is not coming forward for a crossing, we will retain it for this year.
Okay, so what is...
I was going to say, what we have done with that and a couple other things is to build into the forthcoming budget a contingency, so that if we do find that with some of these proposals for transferring, remodelling services don't work straight away, need more work, we've got a backup plan, and that will mean that the crossings will not go.
Okay, so what's the worst case scenario then?
For what? Sorry,
just say for instance. I mean, we're not sacking these lollipop ladies, but what is the worst case scenario? If just say for instance, people are bringing this up.
There will still be crossing patrols.
There will be. But yeah. Will they be? What's the term? Volunteers.
That is possible. If that is the best way to provide that service. As I say, initially, the discussion we're having is that the schools will take them on as a paid service from the school budget.
And if they're not, because this is the...
If they're not, then, as I say, we build in the contingency. We then look a little more widely to say, are there businesses who would like to actually dip their hands in their pocket and help the community? and provide that service. If volunteers want to take it on, there may be some who feel that they would like to provide that service. I know it's a bit of a bugbear that we ask volunteers, and it's not our starting position on an important service like this from this administration, but we go through all those options to see there's going to be that service provided. The question is not whether it's provided, it's how.
Okay, I don't know whether I think she's being sexist anyway, Sylvia. Sorry, Sylvia. Our lollipop ladies, because there are lollipop men as well.
Absolutely.
And so just one more final question on that. If they are to become volunteers, will they be insured by and paid for by the council, or will they have to insure themselves? Because just say, for instance, if they were a volunteer and they let somebody go across the road and they slip and hurt themselves or whatever, and they become they get themselves into trouble, are they going to be covered? I believe so.
That's a very technical question, and I wouldn't like to give an absolute answer. It's a service that's got to be insured. Where that comes from, it might be the schools take on the insurance and someone volunteers under that insurance, but it's got to be part of the mix. I was going to say what the council will provide, which leads me to think that it may be us that takes it on, is that we'll still be providing road safety information, training and so on through the schools. That's something we keep on.
Okay.
But it what you're saying, it's got to be there. I can't, from the top of my head, say exactly how it will be affected, but it must be, and it will probably depend with each patrol who is taking the responsibility for that.
Okay, I mean, that will come to light at some point, but like you keep saying, it's a good point to make, it's not your starting point. That's not where you want to be. What you want, basically, the ideal situation is the schools take it on and they pay for it.
Yeah. I think if you look more generally at things, we've had a mindset in the past that has simply been saying, cut it, stop it. If someone wants to take it on, great, but we're going to cut it. That's not us. What we're saying is these services need to carry on. The best way, sometimes the only way, to make them carry on is for them to be provided differently, provided by other people because of the financial pressures. But we're not going to say cut it and just leave it to flounder and hopefully swim back to shore. But we're going to give it the life jacket, give it the support, and say, again, possibly through the contingency if that is necessary, and say, right, how can we ensure that this service is provided by someone in the future? So it's a different mindset, perhaps.
Okay. John Giddings has just been in touch.
Oh.
And John says, we need to improve the island to attract more visitors. Sandown seafront is shocking. Is there a plan for Sandown?
Sandown, big things are happening in Sandown. If you look to, I mean, this was my brief 18 months ago. It was about 8 months ago, wasn't it? We now have White City being improved. We have a new plan for the Grand Hotel. We have a new plan for the Savoy. We have in discussions over other parts of Sandown seafront with organisations who are wishing to take them on and provide further attractions. Sandown has been a bugbear for a long, long time, and I very much saw that when I held the planning brief. But I'd like to think I started a ball rolling there, that Councillor Fuller, who's now looking after planning, is he's really getting that ball to build up speed.
Good.
And lots of things are changing. I think if you spoke to the ward councillors there, Ian Ward in particular, who has long been a big champion of Sandown, current chairman of the council, he would acknowledge that things are moving there. But it's not just Sandown. There are other places on the island where I think Sandown's the one that really attracts attention because it's so well known. It's that got that iconic status.
It was the jewel in the crown years ago, Sandown.
Absolutely.
It really was.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, it was the place to go to in the summertime.
Absolutely. And when your jewel in the crown is faded, then it has an effect across the rest of the island. But it's something we're very conscious of. Tourism is absolutely crucial here. So if we're not doing anything to brighten the place up, bring people here, we're not doing the job. We're not helping the island.
So there is a plan for Sandown, and it's ongoing. How long?
He didn't say who the Saturday night headliner is, did he?
Not yet. No. should we message him back? How long do you think it will be before we see a return? You know, Sandown, yeah, there being a difference. You know, we go there and think.
I'd like to think the difference is starting now. How long it will take? How good can we make it? So I don't think we should have a cut-off point, say we'll achieve something in the next 2 years, then leave it and move on somewhere else. If we can keep on improving,
yeah,
I think that's, again, that's the mindset we should have.
Okay, because we're only doing half an hour, we've only got like 5, 6, 7 minutes left, and I've got one or two questions. This is probably a question you get asked a lot. Why are the roads not being repaired as quickly as they should be? Potholes that should have been repaired before Christmas are still there. I mean, this guy's going on and he's got so many good points to make. So what's happening at the island? You must have noticed this. The island's roads are just dire. And yes, there have been some roads that have been repaired and so on, but it doesn't seem to be very quick. I drive down or rode down on the bike through the High Street, Newport High Street. There are holes in the ground. It's blimmin' dreadful. So what's the hot news on that? And also, is it true, because it was made, we were told last week that Island Roads are currently doing certain roads that aren't seriously bad because the chances of them having to do them again in 25 years are pretty remote. They're doing those roads first, and they're going to do all the rotten roads last so they don't end up doing them before they lose the contract after 25 years. So over to you.
Right, just what do you say? We've got 5 minutes to deal with that one.
Yeah, you've got a minute to answer that one.
The council, a few years ago, under the last administration, entered this contract with Island Roads. I was one of the two councillors in the chamber at that time who didn't like the look of it, was suspicious about it. The other one was Ian Stevens. And I think we were right, frankly, because the more one looks at it, and how it's being operated at the moment, we've got problems with that contract. That is why we now have an executive member, Councillor Phil Jordan, who's pretty much his full-time job is digging into that contract and trying to sort it out. I'm being a little cautious because we're hopefully going to be making a statement very soon in the next 48 hours about the reorganisation of how we get to grips with that contract, because it's not been done, and I'm being a little cautious because, as I say, there's a meeting going on this afternoon, which I hope will lead to something being said very soon.
We'll wait for that. It's
top two on my list at the moment. The budget, sorting that out, and sorting out Island Roads and the state of the roads, and that means sorting out the contract, how we manage the contract. We had a situation where pretty much wholesale the entirety of the highways department went over to Island Roads and left us with pretty much nothing at the council, and that meant also not just no highways function but no way proper way of controlling the highways function and the performance of another body, and that's not a good place to be in.
Sure.
So that is what we're looking at. As I say, I'm being a little cagey. I know that's not what people want to hear.
But I mean, to be honest,
I hope we'll be saying something very publicly very soon about how we're addressing that. Because once you've sorted out the management of it, then we can really start to address all these little difficulties.
Okay.
And as a ward councillor, I'm very conscious of the potholes and so on.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but something is
afoot.
Yes,
you do. That's the whole point I'm coming in.
Well, yeah, okay. let's fire another one at you then. Roger Sanders says, I don't think Islanders have much faith in councillors anymore. They seem more interested in petty political squabbles, addressing the islands than addressing the island's problems. The town centres are dying, but a new Asda store will be built on council land whilst parking charges are being increased. Can anyone tell me how this makes any sense? I know a man that can.
There's quite a lot there. His first point about trusting councillors, he's absolutely right. Given some of the things that have happened recently, why on earth would anyone trust us? Given the shouting matches sometimes you see in public meetings, what impression does that give? An appalling impression. I think I quite publicly said I want to see an end to playground behaviour. It's watching this programme on last night, I saw a bit of the programme about Palace of Westminster, and they were just revelling in the fact that, we know when to stand up and shout and when to barrack someone. Could you actually get on with the job and represent the people and put forward their problems?
Jonathan, that's all we want. And that is all we want. We want we want you guys to get round a table, and if you've got to make your points in a way, but make them in a grown up way, and then we shake hands afterwards. I don't care what party you're in. I don't care the colours. I'm not interested. We just want the best for the island. And
it's a business. It's got to be regarded now as a business. And we've got certain things we've got to do, particularly looking after children, looking after vulnerable adults. And the way to do that, I'm sure in big business organisations, they don't sit there in the boardroom going, shame and all this sort of thing. They actually get on and discuss the business and make decisions.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to do. Now, I've gone off one about that, but the gentleman asked a couple of other questions. Just remind me what...
Oh, about that ASDA. Let's nip this one in the bud then, because I spoke to you a little while ago and I said to you, off air, I look around Newport and I think there's a great big building across the way there, and it's just sitting there and it's going to rack and ruin. Wouldn't it be great if someone like the council had the strength and the ability to say, right, we're going to take this on and we're going to turn it into something that the youth can use? And you said to me, that's communism, that is. You can't do that.
Did I say that?
Yeah, you did. You said that's communism. And
we do have powers, limited powers that can be used in extremis to take on buildings, compulsory purchase essentially. It's an extremely expensive way of going about things.
That's what I wanted you to say. Yeah. It's the reasons why. We're all thinking it. Well, that's the reason why. And
you can offer some assistance to a business to come forward and say, look, that needs dealing with, that building, we can offer you routes to grant funding, funding options, support to enable that to be regenerated. That's what we can do. If it that doesn't work, then yes, for something that is seriously damaging an area, damaging a neighbourhood, then we do have powers. Some of that has been used in Sandown, and elsewhere. A lot of it comes down to money.
Okay.
A lot of it does come down to money. And as I think people are aware now, we have had so much money stripped out of the system in the last few years, and that's continuing on, that it really does affect how we can use those powers we have.
We've run out of time, so it's not just about money, it's about time as well. I want to say thank you for your time, obviously.
I'm sorry I couldn't come in sooner. I came straight out of a meeting over here.
It's fine. I mean, I think would it be great to do if we could come in and sort of have, the bacon surgery maybe once a month would be really, really good. Because I think it's just putting these rumours to bed. One final question, if you could answer quickly. Would you ask him if he intends to reverse the decision on the fire service, losing the chief fire officer to Hampshire, and also what has the council done with all the money that they have saved from not paying the fire service and ambulance personnel when they were on strike? It must be thousands. Donate it to charity, he says.
As far as the fire service is concerned, that is a decision that has been made. Again, it's largely financially driven, but we've only made that decision because we're absolutely assured that there will be no change to the service.
Okay.
It is actually the way to maintain the service. If we didn't make that decision, I think with the resources we've got purely here on the island, we would find that we'd be at a risk of a reduced service. This is actually about maintaining a very important service for the island.
Okay, we've run out of time, but thank you for your time. Thank you for yours. You will come back again.
We'll
make
a date.
I'll even make you coffee next time.
All right, that's a first.
Now you're the leader. I've got we can't stretch to a parking space, but you can have your own mug. All right,
the leader's mug. Yeah.
Thank you, Jonathan, and enjoy the rest of your busy day.
Thank you very much.